This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 153, sponsored by the Mid-Ohio Con, In-Stock Trades, and Netflix.
When you walk through the garden, gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, save your soul. You gotta keep a devil way down in a hole.
Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 153. My name is Ron, and I'm a little under the weather, but I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
I'm all confused. Hi.
and Connor. And
Josh goes last.
And hopefully, I'm changing things up. And hopefully they'll pick me up and carry me through the podcast. So we're from ifanboy.com, where we like comics and we read a lot of comics, although not this week. We didn't read that many. And every week, one of us picks the best one that came out. We write a review on ifanboy.com. We call it the Pick of the Week. Then we come here and discuss it, as well as some of the other comics, as well as answering your questions via email and voicemail and things like that. Before we dive in, though, I just want to warn everybody that we're going to talk about what happened in the books. So it's often considered spoiling the comics. So if you haven't read your books, press pause and go read them and then come back. So this week, Josh has the pick, and I will hand it off to him so I can stop talking.
It's funny that you say not many books, because for me, that's 9 books now.
Oh, which, yeah. I bought 5 or 6.
That's this crazy. Week,
yeah, which is me. That's crazy.
That's really
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
I don't even get weeks like that anymore.
Yeah. I had 10, and that was half of what I normally get now.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know what to do with myself on Wednesday. I was like,
I read no Marvel books.
I hate this podcast, this life we lead, 20 books a week.
It was not an easy week to have Pick of the Week.
No, it sucks for you.
Because this week was, and I don't mean to dismiss the book, because we're going to talk about that in a second, which is Top 10 Season 2, Number 1. But it was like going home to mom's house, and your mom's not really that good of a cook. So everything was kind of okay, but it wasn't really exciting. You know what I mean?
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Thank you. You know, it's just like I got finished my books and I looked at all of them and I was like, oh, this was okay and that was good. But it was really hard to figure something out that was interesting to talk about, because you can't just be like, this book was good. You have to have a reason for it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the one that made me sort of smile, it was the happiest, was this Top 10 book, because I expected nothing of it. In fact, I almost didn't buy it. For those of you following along at home, Alan Moore did a series called Top 10 for America's Best Comics way back in, 1998, 99, something like that.
Yeah, 99, 2000, like around there.
Yeah, and they did season 1, which was 12 issues about this sort of silly, sort of melodramatic, all characters in this city, Neapolis, are superheroes. They don't just have superpowers, they're all superheroes. It's part of the culture. They have costumes and you know, character names and all that stuff. And this is a team of cops who work for the Neapolis PD. And it's one of my favorite series, because it was a lot of really good things about it. And it was really cool to me, because I had never seen Alan Moore do that kind of story. You know what I mean? Like, that was one of the things that convinced me that this guy couldn't just do deep serious stuff, but he could have fun and do really well at that also and be funny and all those things. And so because he's Alan Moore, he got mad at somebody for some reason and said, "I'm never going to work with you again," which he's done more than like he's done that a lot. Actually, he's only done it twice.
This was DC.
Yeah. He's done it to DC a couple of times, though. Yeah.
I mean, ABC was Wildstorm. Right. Wildstorm.
Well, yeah, America's Best Comics is his imprint under Wildstorm that started while Wildstorm was at Image, and it was Alan Moore was going to have his own imprint of comics, and then literally weeks after it launched, Jim Lee sold to DC and had to fly to England and tell Alan Moore in person and be like, "I'm sorry," and Alan Moore,
to his credit, was like, "All right, fine, we'll go with this."
Until DC then, pissed him off, and yeah,
they pulped a bunch of issues of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I think, because of literally. Here's a little history for you. There was an ad in the back of them. They had fake Victorian ads, and one of them was for a product called Marvel Douche. And then they pulped those, which actually had nothing to do with Marvel, so they say. Either way, so skip to now. There's your history for it. And Xander Cannon and Gene Ha, who worked on the first series. Xander did the layouts, and Gene Ha did the art. Want to keep it going, apparently. So they said, "You know what, Alan Moore, we will do it without you. We don't want to let this die." Which, as I said in my review, the balls on this guy. To be like, I can write this. That's fine.
I gotta give Xander Cannon credit. I love that name, Xander Cannon. Yeah. It's a great name.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like there should have been a book in America's Best Comics, like Tom Strong, Xander Cannon.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. And so they did this book, this issue that came out, and I wasn't sure I would pick it up. And then I thought, well, there's no intruders, there's no interlopers. They didn't bring in some other guy. It wasn't like Roger Stern presents Top 10. If anybody's going to know this stuff, it's going to be these two.
Yep.
And you know what? It was not an Alan Moore book. It was not that elegant. It was not that great, but it was really enjoyable. It was good to go back. It was great to see Gene Ha again. And plotting wise, I felt it was very strong. I think some of the dialogue was a little clunky from here or there, but it kind of was to begin with. So the whole time I was reading it, I kept comparing myself like, is this just different, or am I just looking into it too much or whatever? But I also kept getting impressed as I was reading through it, because they would do some character stuff and all the characters, because they look exactly the same because it's the same artist, it brought you right back, and I just had a ton of fun reading it. And it's only four issues, and what's funny is that the amount of stuff that they set up in here feels like it would take more than four issues to take care of, which is kind of cool, which is commendable, it's laudable. Did either of you guys read this?
I picked it up.
Oh yeah?
No.
Okay then.
Yes, either of us. I'm just giving my answer.
Why didn't you pick it up? Because you're going to read it in trade?
No, because I'm not interested in Alan Moore's free top 10. Just like in Josh said in his review, he mentioned West Wing, which was a great example. I'm not interested in West Wing without Aaron Sorkin. I'm not interested in a top 10 without Alan Moore.
Wow. It's harsh.
No, it's not harsh. It's just there's some properties that are so, for me, connected to their creator.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to... Even Josh's review saying now, it sounds like something I would definitely not like. It's Top 10 to me is one of the best series of the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was so special. And if you're saying this seems like Top 10 light, then I'm not interested in that. And that's fine. Other people can be. Just I don't want to read something that's gonna be that way. I watched The West Wing a few times after Aaron Sorkin left, and it was West Wing light, and I wasn't interested in that.
Well, the first five was terrible.
Right. So
when it got to season 6 and 7, they decided to stop trying to be him and to make it its own thing. It was much better.
Right, but I have the first four. I don't need any more. I have the season one of
you're,
Top 10.
You're never going to know what happened to Zoe. That's all I'm saying.
She's still kidnapped somewhere.
She's sitting in a box somewhere.
I picked it up, though, and admittedly, I got the top 10 trades. Connor, I think you gave them to me for Christmas, right? And
yes.
Admittedly, they're great. They're really, really good. But my complaint about top 10 in general was that it was just so dense and so it was very heavy to read. Originally, and I remember that was why I originally dropped it in the first place when it first started coming out, because I bought the issues when they were coming out. But I saw, Josh, I saw you pick this, so I'm like, oh, I'll pick it up, I'll take a look at it. And my same complaint about the first series was the same here. It felt very dense, it felt very heavy. It wasn't like, oh, this is Alan Moore light. I didn't get that. I didn't really get that feeling. It just felt like more of the same. What I thought was really interesting was I didn't really love the artistic approach that Gene Ha was taking with this. It had a more...
It's slightly different than the first series, but it is similar.
Hang on. It has a more painterly look to it, maybe similar to the issue of Justice League he did, but that was even more painted than this.
He did the 49ers in the middle,
okay,
which won an Eisner Award, which was more like this.
Okay. But what I thought was really, really interesting as the issue developed was, and maybe I'm crazy and maybe it's just the... because I'm addled, but is there a mixture of the painted look and like the comic, the clean comic look?
Yes.
Which I thought was like in the same panel.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. That's the one thing that made me stand up and notice. I'm like, okay, this is really cool, because in the same panel there are characters and there are physical mm-hmm. objects that have this painted look, but then there are other characters and other physical objects that have that clean line comic book look.
It's really interesting. Yeah. It seems as if it's not consistent. I can't quite figure out why, which normally would bother me. But a lot of times, like, the character who's speaking or the people you're supposed to be focused on,
yep.
they're the ones who are painted.
Yep.
And then
people in the background or on the side or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Really strange. But I like it. I mean, at the end of this, I every time I see Gene Ha work, I'm just like, why isn't this guy more huge? You know what I mean? Like, you know, the JLA issue, number 11, that you won an Eisner for that issue. You know, won an Eisner for the 49ers, like we said, that was the original graphic novel.
It's a great graphic novel.
You know, why not more? I mean, he's great. He's fantastic. And so, you know, because of that, that puts you over the edge. Because the thing is, Alan Moore is the creator of the comic, but so are these two guys. You know, these guys had something to do with it. The development, the look, the feel, all that stuff. So, you know, that was enough to still make me dig it. You know, it wasn't exactly the same, but I enjoyed it. You know, the thing that it was missing a little of was all of the background stuff that happened.
Yeah, like, because that was what I remember Top 10 was so amazing, because in the background there was little references and things like that. And I picked up some of them, like one of the stores was a Grit store and had the old Grit logo, but I didn't get that sense that it was like filled with it as much as the first series.
Yeah, exactly.
It was almost half the story in the first one was in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, I didn't hate it. In that same panel that you're talking about, there's the Disney Magic Castle back there.
Yeah.
That's great. And, you know, there was definitely fun stuff. And you know, out of a week of stuff that was not great, this was the thing that made me smile the most. It's funny that you didn't like that it's dense. Like, this took me my entire train ride home to read.
Wow.
It was the first thing I read, because I was expecting nothing of it, and that's what I read first. And it's like, there's a lot of stuff there. And it's four issues. There was a mini that came out that was like 5 years in the future by Paul DeVillipes and drawn by Jerry Ordway, and that was something I totally wasn't interested in. Yeah. And I haven't heard anything to dissuade me of that, but it was fun. It was a good time. It was definitely worth taking a look at. The cover alone, just like seeing it on the stands, that really brought me back. And I like that the guys like it enough that they're going to give it another go, because it's not like it's terribly popular.
Yeah.
So
cool.
There you go.
Xander Cannon, PI. dude sitting on a gold mine. He doesn't even know it.
Unshaven, just sort of rumpled.
Yeah, maybe a Hawaiian shirt.
Carries a really big, like, 45.
Yeah, exactly. Smokes.
Sounds like a B. Clay Moore title.
No Hawaiian shirt. He's got to have a rumpled suit.
Oh, rumpled suit. Okay, I'll go with rumpled suit. Yeah, I'll go with rumpled suit. Yeah. A hat?
Unsized
a fedora, baby. Maybe? Or
he's got a smoking problem. He's in debt.
He's got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Drinking.
He looks like David Duchovny with 15 years on him.
Yes.
You mean like David Duchovny? All right.
Get so much tail.
So did anything else come out this week, really?
There was stuff worth talking about. Batman 680 seemed to be the favorite of the iFanboy community, I think, when it comes to what the – I think that was the highest pick of the week picked book. And to its credit, I felt this was the first issue in the whole thing where I pretty much knew what was going on the whole time, where, you know, a lot of times the complaint has been that it was a little difficult to follow. But this one was still pretty straightforward. However, I was talking to Connor about this, is that at the end of it – Ron, you don't read this, right?
What?
You're not reading the Batman RIP, right?
No, I'm sorry. I started reading Four Eyes while you were talking about Batman.
I don't blame you. at the end, there's this whole sequence where it's all being revealed to Bruce, and the Joker keeps saying, "Now do you get it? Now do you get it?" And because of sort of the unclarity before, I kept wondering. I was like, what did I miss? Have I missed something? But I figured I haven't, and they're going to tell me later. But it was actually pretty enjoyable. I like this.
It's funny because Batman RIP is almost following the textbook Grant Morrison style, in that the first issue was really confusing.
Yes.
And, like, you don't know what is happening. And then it got with each issue, it got less confusing, and the pieces started to fall into place. Mm-hmm. This issue was so straightforward and simple that I expect the next issue will exist entirely on a silver platter.
Yeah,
because every issue, everything, and this was very straightforward. We're having the pieces revealed, and basically, the big thing at the end. Well, the story is a bunch of rich people get together so they can watch the end of Batman. This guy, the guy who has been Black Hand, has been orchestrating this whole thing. He is, you know, gathering all these rich people together to see the destruction of Batman. And then at the very end, the Joker's let loose to fight Batman, and we get revealed that Jezebel Jett, as many suspected is either the Black Glove or part of the Black Glove, but she's definitely evil. It's funny because the whole time we've been talking about this, the color scheme of black and red has been mentioned by Grant Morrison in it throughout this issue, and he said it would be right in front of our faces, and basically it has. She is a black woman with red hair, and we haven't, you know, no one picked up on that until this issue. And so it's sometimes
hard to deduce ethnicity in comic books, which is probably why.
She's clearly been black for the whole time she's been in the book.
I don't think I realized that, but that's fine. Usually the tried and true way of having comic book writers mention that somebody's black is to make them speak ridiculously. And
right,
so he didn't do, thank God.
Yeah, but this is really good. The problem with this series is that it's the delays to the Tony Daniels art is just killing it.
On the other hand, I think it's really important to give Tony Daniel a lot of credit for two things. One, it's really nice looking. Like, this is a guy who's gotten better as he's gone through this. But two, it's a fairly comprehensively drawn thing. Like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff he had to do. Like, I feel
there's
like
a lot in the book. Each panel's packed full of stuff.
I imagine his interpretation of the script took a good deal of effort and time, which is probably why, because it's very dense. And I think he's doing a really good job of making what is, you know, sort of incomprehensible, comprehensible at times.
Oh, I agree. The art has been great. It's just that it's the delay. With a book like this where you've got to follow every clue, it really is hard to do. I mean, I don't even remember the last time an issue came out. I couldn't tell you.
I'm always really amazed at the ability of some comics fans to remember stuff like that. Like, I'll read through the comments on our site and things, and people will mention shit, and I don't remember any of the details of anything anymore. It's all detritus.
It might be a matter of training or, you know, like honed skill, because over the years I've had the same thought, is that I don't understand how I remember what happened in the last issue, especially when they were delayed a long time ago. But for some reason I'm just like, it takes a couple of panels, I'm like, oh yeah, right, okay, I'm in it.
No, you're pretty good at it, but I'm talking about people who can bring it up like without looking at the issues and remember that shit. They're like, but in Daredevil 17, you know, like, oh
right,
there's a lot of them. And we see it a lot, and it's,
well, they like comics,
I guess they do.
Yeah.
Are we done with Batman?
Yeah, no, it was very good. It was almost my pick of the week. It wasn't, but it was very, very close. It was one of the better issues of this whole thing, which I've liked a lot.
Definitely.
I'm really looking forward to the next issue. I really want to know what happens. I mean, that's the mark.
And that will be with us any year now. Anyway, yeah. I think the only other contender that I had up for the pick was Four Eyes number one.
That was a good contender. Absolutely.
Yeah, by Joe Kelly, written by an artist, Max Fumara.
Fumara?
Yeah, whatever.
Fuke.
or Fumke. do you guys both read this?
Yep.
No.
Oh.
I just love
it. It's imaged.
It's just every time we ask him, no. This is a interesting, we heard about it in San Diego, and basically the premise is a 1930s time period. Middle of the Depression in a world with dragons. Which is pretty cool. Dragons are always fun to have.
It's like, I'm trying to think of it's like some mob movie where the kid has to succeed the father, meets Reign of Fire. By the way, Reign of Fire, greatest film of all time. You may not know that.
And
bring him to me, Quinn.
Y'all having your fun?
We get introduced to a little boy, and he's out on vacation with his parents, and he sees his father kind of perish, and he takes on his role of working with the dragons after him. And it's this interesting world of where dragons exist, and there are like bouts there, the dragons fight each other. And I love how there was there's a protester holding a sign says "Compassion, not cages," with a dragon all chained up.
I didn't expect it to be like a dog fighting thing.
Yeah, totally.
Which is basically what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing about this book that really, really, really impressed me is that Joe Kelly's a guy who I don't think gets enough credit. Like, he really built a world up very, very quickly.
Yep.
And there's back matter in here that fills it out a little more, and it's totally different from sort of others. This is like, what other book is like this? This is crazy.
Yeah, no, and it's a world that not only does he build up, but it's a world that you want to know more about, that you want to see more things happen in.
Definitely.
Which is not easy to do.
Further to that, there are a couple of pages in this that, like, you flip the page and the art is stunning.
Yeah.
There's the double page spread of the dragon flying over New York City.
Yeah,
I mean, that's as good a couple of pages as you see.
Yeah, no, Max Fiumara, is his art. I was very impressed by his art. I mean, it was really, really good. And
Joe Kelly talked about that in our San Diego interview, and that these guys he discovered, these artists that he's really, really excited to work with, and the art that I saw were fantastic.
Yeah,
he fucking well should be. I mean,
it was interesting because there was a couple of pages that gave me a little bit of a Marcos Martin vibe, you know, with the coloring.
I saw Tim Sale.
Yeah, like the one page with the ominous guy, Cristoforo Bocconi. Yeah, exactly. When he comes in, like that was very much like that. And the thing is that it gets the setting across. I mean, it's the New York and the Depression in the 30s, and it's a rich kind of background behind it. And then
yeah, he's got people all over the place, and they all, you know, exude that time and era and the Depression. It's just great.
And you've got these dragons who are, I mean, you say dragon and there's an immediate kind of idea pops in your head of what a dragon looks like. And I think this is the way he's drawing the dragons is true to that, but also unique in a way that I've never seen before.
Yep, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what was really cool about this to me is that I saw a lot of people talking about it on the site, and for sort of an image book from a guy who used to be a bigger name at the mainstream books, I guess. Like, it was really cool to see, like, after I Killed Giants had built up a little bit of critical mass, people really checked this out and liked it. And I think that's really, that's good.
That's awesome. Cool.
Good stuff.
My pick of the week ended up being Supergirl 34, which we joked about on the shipping list mini about how this is the umpteenth reboot of Supergirl. And it's true, it is the umpteenth reboot of Supergirl. But this one was actually really lots of fun. This is from Sterling Gates and Jamal Igel. They're the new team. This is where it starts integrating with the other Superman books. So much so that one of the B-plots from Action finally comes to fruition in this book, where Cat Grant is back in the Action Comics book, and she's got the new breast implants, and she wears low-cut shirts, and she's the center of attention for all the guys in the newsroom of the Daily Planet. But then one day, Supergirl goes to the office to talk to Clark, and all the guys are like, hey, you know, what's going on there? Which annoys Cat Grant, because here's a younger, more attractive woman that steals her thunder.
Who's Cat Grant?
And she's a reporter. She's a character.
I thought it might have been Supergirl's secret identity or something.
She's a reporter for many, many years. Okay. She's a gossip reporter at the Daily Planet. And she's got a long, interesting history, which doesn't really need to get into right now. But in the whole time, in the background, she's been fuming about being upstaged by the Supergirl. And finally, in this issue, she puts out an editorial, Why the World Doesn't Need Supergirl, and it totally trashes her. And everybody sort of starts rethinking Supergirl. And Supergirl is sort of a crisis of, who am I? Why am I doing this? Is it really worth it if people on the street make fun of me or whatever? So she goes around to Superman, to Wonder Woman, to Robin, and has a sort of a heart-to-heart about what she should do. It is very much a rebooting and a restarting of, not a rebooting, but it is a sort of a refocusing on the character. Like, who is she? What does she do? Why does she do what she does, even when somebody throws a soda at her? It was a really, really strong character issue. There was some action, but it was mostly just her talking to all these heroes, figuring out why it is they do what they do, and should she have a secret identity, and what should she do? And at the end, she ends up having a secret identity. She becomes Lana Lang's niece, and she is going to be working at the Daily Planet with Clark. Just a really strong character issue.
And Kat?
Cat Grant doesn't know yet.
No, but right, but is that, that's your conflict? Is that the two of them are going to work at the Daily Planet together, probably?
They'll be the Daily Planet together. It'll be right. Part of it.
Yeah.
It's going to be all part. If you're reading any of the Superman books, you're probably going to want to start reading this too. A, it's really good, but B, it's also going to be tied into the story, the coming new Krypton story that's going to go through all three of these books. And it was really strong. Jamal Igel's art is getting better and better. Great. I've always been a fan of his, but this is really strong, good stuff. And it's not cheesecakey at all. There's no pose of her sticking her ass out at the camera or bending over. It's all just
give it time. No one can help that. You must.
Is there still a half shirt?
There's still a half shirt. Okay. But she's a teenager.
How old is she supposed to be? Over 18?
16, 17. No, not over 18.
Sorry.
It's sort of like hot chick Peter Parker.
Oh, no.
Yes. It is. I mean, isn't that what Peter Parker's thing is? Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Nobody appreciates me.
Oh, right. Yeah. I thought he meant forget it. I'm sorry. Anyway, carry on. So, Jonah Hex.
This is a weird issue, Josh.
It was a weird issue. And about halfway through, I was looking at it, and I was like, his face is normal.
This is actually my least favorite issue of Jonah Hex that they've ever put out. I gave it 3 stars on iFanboy. I've never given it lower than 4. Mm-hmm. Number one, because the guy drew Jonah Hex with a normal face. His character is his messed up face. That's
right, but
part of who he is. And
it had me questioning the timeline, because this took place, I think, 2 years after the Civil War, and I couldn't remember because they did the issue where he got cut, and maybe that happened after this.
They did that, but as far as I know, that was before, when he was younger.
I can't remember.
By this point, he's got his reputation as the baddest guy in the West. But the thing was, that was part of it. It wasn't so much that. I thought the art at times was completely incomprehensible. And some panels just could not tell what was happening. I didn't like it. I don't know why. I mean, I thought it was a 3-star book. I didn't hate it.
I did, but I see the issues that you're talking about. One of the things that was really, really interesting about this is they did something that I thought was sort of necessary because it answered a question that I had in my head. And it's that, you know, here we are. We live in 2008. you know, the world is a whole different place than it was then. But this book normally takes place after the Civil War, and Jonah Hex rides around in a Confederate jacket. Now, a lot of people are – it's not even a liberal thing to be like, that's a little weird, I suppose, to have a hero who's riding around in a Confederate uniform and what that means. And this really gets into some of the questions of why he ended up joining the Confederacy, which was almost out of ignorance, basically, and then why he continues to wear it, which I thought was a really interesting idea. He so dislikes people of every stripe. He's not a racist in any way, but he so dislikes everybody that he wears that uniform so that they hate him back. And he doesn't have to worry about people trying to be friendly to him or whatever. And the people who are friendly to him, well, then they're assholes.
Actually, the story was pretty good. I gave the 3 stars basically for the story because the art was – I just hated. But it's – I never had a problem with the jacket because it takes place within a time period where that would have been okay.
No, and that's fine. I just think it's really interesting that they had to think about it and came up with, I thought, a really compelling reason for him to keep doing that. Yeah. Because the thing is, you know, you wear a military uniform most of the time if you're wearing it afterwards because you have a lot of pride in what you did, and that's not the case with him. So why is he wearing it?
I agree.
Because he has no pride. I thought that was really interesting. For that, this issue was really compelling to me. And also, you know, it's really difficult to tackle matters of, you know, how he's treating slaves after, like, it's difficult to do that and not come off offensively, I think. And it was really sort of interestingly done, I thought. I didn't mind the art as much, but I see what you mean.
There's a couple of panels I couldn't tell you what was happening. That's a problem from a storytelling standpoint. I like that they experiment with the art. I like that they try different people in different styles. That's not for me, that's not a problem. It's just this
guy is probably huge in Belarus.
That's what I was thinking. He's probably very big somewhere that I don't, you know about. But for me, it just didn't work.
It was very not too far from a Simone Bianchi kind of deal, I guess, but without being exactly like that.
Simone's cleaner.
Ooh, speaking of Simone, I saw that he's not astonished. Alan Davis is coming to Astonish X-Men, and he's just doing covers.
Oh, so, it's
sorry. I just remembered that. I remembered I was on the podcast, so I thought I'd say something.
Ron, you're going to get your wish because Scott Summers is going to go back to the early 80s.
I know. Yes.
Is that for an arc or is that for good?
I think it's for an arc. I don't know if it's for good. I'm gonna look into it. I'm going to call some of my contacts. We'll see what we can find out.
Well, yeah, eventually you can pick up that 3-issue arc or whatever arc number it is. You can get it in stocktrades.com where they have over 37% off their cover prices, free shipping over orders over $50, and you get 5,400 trade paperbacks, blah, blah, blacks, in stock, available for order. That's what happens when I read ahead of the script. New releases listed every Wednesday. Orders usually ship within 48 hours at www.instocktrades.com. And coming soon, we'll have the new book of the month, and you'll be able to get that at a huge discount at InStockTrades.com. I know what it is, but I can't say because we haven't done it yet, but it's very exciting.
Yay.
All right. Bet it'll excite more than the Charles Lindbergh book did.
Probably. You never know. Actually,
it may not.
It may not, actually.
Actually, I didn't know how to think about it. It may not.
This is the Bob Vila comic book of home repair. Really? That's what you're doing?
Bob Vila can really draw.
There's a name no one says anymore. Real quickly, I wanted to mention House of Mystery. This was one of those books this week that I thought was really interesting and really good. Sort of nothing – it wasn't pick-worthy, but it's a book that I haven't really talked about a whole lot. I mean, but I've been reading it all along, and with each issue, it gets a little more interesting. There's a female pirate who's a character in this book who's stuck in the house, and they told her backstory, and it reminded me a little bit of reading some of the more fun parts of Neal Stephenson's Baroque trilogy, which is, you know, all pirates and whatnot, and it just reminded me of that, and that was fun. And there's just more story going forward, and this is a really fun issue, and I liked it. I'm still liking it. So if you haven't checked it out, six issues in, it's still pretty good.
They're probably gonna collect it in a trade very soon.
The first five will be collected. This was a part one.
Yeah.
So if it isn't even out yet, it might be. This was great. Great covers, good stuff.
I wanted to really like House of Mystery. I read issue one. I got one of those Vertigo samples, which was half House of Mystery, half Young Liars. And I read the Young Liars. And I made it about 4 or 5 pages in House of Mystery, and I just decided that wasn't meant for me. Just
maybe.
It sounds like it. It's just kind of like my eyes sort of rolled over, and I got bored, and I just stopped reading it. But
And then you had a seizure.
He stroked out.
That's awful.
House of Mystery gave Connor a stroke. He's fine now.
Awful.
I really like Marvel books now. I don't know why.
he's only reading lesbian true life stories.
What a weird week. I didn't buy one Marvel book.
Neither did
I. Yeah, no.
Neither did I. Oh, no, I did. I bought one. I bought Punisher War Journal, which was fun. Howard Chaykin, yay.
One book I did buy was Red Mask from Mars, number 2, from Jonathan Hickman and Image Comics. I know in the beginning of the show, the first couple of books, I didn't read Four Eyes and Top 10, and you guys sort of laughed and you assumed I was waiting for the trade. Jonathan Hickman makes the case for waiting for the trade.
Yeah, he does. You know what I find really interesting, too, though, is that none of – we were talking about this at the store, at the comic book store. None of his Image projects, like, he's doing these four-issue series.
Yeah.
Like, they're not these, you know, like, it's just four issues in a trade, and you're done, and you're out. You know, like, and it's really interesting in terms of the format choice, you know. Of course, the timing of it hurts like hell, but.
That's the problem. Yeah. It's so dense. There's so much going on, and by the time that this, you know, the issues come out, you just have no concept of what's happening. This issue I actually enjoyed more than the first one once I remembered what was happening. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you wait so long. Like, Nightly News, read the first issue, didn't love it, then read it in trade and loved it. I wonder if maybe his stuff is better suited. It's just so hard to.
Oh, well, somebody, after I put up the pick, somebody Twittered me, "What, you don't like Red Master Mars?" I loved this book. I just had no idea where I was starting from when I got into it because it had been such a long time and it had been so – it's just so dense. And I really like – it's great. Just like everything else, he's never put out anything that was less than great, but there's a lot there. And I was like, what the hell am I reading? And it takes you a little while to get into it, and I think that's Paul Giamatti.
this is one of the few cases, I mean, you know where I net out on the whole trade issue thing, debate and stuff like that, but I think this is one of the few cases where he is doing this for the trade. I mean, his purpose is for these to come out in one collected kind of volume, you know. Yeah, it's unfortunate because it's just so pretty. Listen, it's so pretty.
If I have to, it's so pretty. It's really, you know what I like? This is actually the most standard comic book I think he's
totally
done.
Oh yeah, this is a superhero book. This is his first superhero
and
book. Yeah,
figures,
yeah.
And you know, by the way, I really like this art. I made that joke about Paul Giamatti. The only thing I don't like about using celebrity faces because it makes you think of them immediately. Right. But at the same time, I really, really dug this art.
Ryan Bodenheim, he's really good.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
I think a lot of it has to do with Hickman's coloring too. The coloring is fantastic in it.
I will keep buying these in issues just to, you know, to further ensure that they get to trade. But, you know, besides that, I still dug it. I just, it wasn't enough. I didn't remember enough to be able to be like,
when you have
this
to spend a quarter to a half the issue to remember, you know, to get up to speed, it sort of takes away from the enjoyment of the issue itself. It's just that's a problem.
A little bit.
The JLA, Justice League of America 25, the double-sized anniversary issue, which, actually it's not. I'm putting my words in their mouth. The Curious Case of Justice League of America.
Now, what did you think of this, Connor?
I really think that Dwayne McDuffie does fantastic character stuff in this book. He does great interactions between the characters, and I appreciate it more having watched most of the Justice League cartoon now, getting a sense of how he writes these people. He does fantastic scenes between the characters' dialogue interactions. It's the plots that are the problem, and I don't know I don't know where to lay that down onto him or onto DC because he keeps getting shoehorned into events, and it feels like this book has no identity of its own. Every couple of issues, something else happens from outside this book, and it affects this book, and you just want this book to go on its own without being affected by everything else. I wish it was more like the beginning scene where Flash and Green Lantern are making fun of each other's costumes and trying to decide whose is more outlandish. Like that stuff is very good and funny, and I laughed and. I like the stuff with Batman and Zatanna where there's more flirtation going on there. And that's all fantastic character stuff. It's the plot, more Totem stuff, which you think they would have learned from Spider-Man, how much of a mistake that is.
That was my point, is that this. I thought this started out really, really good. I got really excited to sit down and read it, and I saw that Derek Robertson had some art in it. I saw, you know, Ivan Reese, and there's some mixed art going on, and it would be cool. It would be fun to read, and I thought the opening scene was really, really great. And then, okay, great, so they're going to go to Animal Man. I love Animal Man, and... Then the moment he referred to the yellow aliens, I was like, oh, they're going to go there. And then I turned the page, and then it's a two-page spread of Vixen and a big spider, and who's Kawaku Anasi, and all stories belong to me. And I just said, oh, God, this one just went off the rails hardcore. And it just crashed. And it just, it was a mess. It was too much. I mean, I like the idea of a 25th double-sized issue, but it was too much. And after that double-page spider spread, the only thing that had me interested was the Derek Robertson Batman Red Tornado pages, which were awesome. But other than that, it was just crap.
That's African folklore, Anansi the Spider.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Neil Gaiman did a whole book about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of would fit with Vixen. I think the thing about this book, and I don't read it, so I'm talking out of my ass.
But I'm going to tell you anyway.
My thought is that this should be the biggest book that they're doing, and it's not, and no one even really talks about it.
It hasn't been the biggest book in years and years, not even when Meltzer was doing it.
It should be. I mean, like, you know, Marvel has Bendis on the Avengers. Now, whatever you say about what they're like now, they're still must-reads.
Yeah.
You know, you have to read them, and honestly, no offense to Dwayne McDuffie at all, but why don't they have a bigger name on this? Why don't they make a bigger deal out of this book?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
on life support.
It should be. Although I feel like that about a lot of books right now.
Brad Meltzer's been off the book for over a year now.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
You know, make a big announcement.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I mean, look at the cover alone. The cover alone, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 characters, two of which are Green Lanterns. I understand.
JSA doesn't suffer from that, though.
No, it doesn't, but JLA does. I mean, like, they made a big deal about putting Black Canary in charge of the team, and she's not in charge of the team. It's a joke.
I don't think the character's the problem. The problem is, the reason why JSA doesn't suffer from those casts is because Geoff Johns' vision is very true. He's been writing since the beginning. It's been his book. It's his story.
Right, and there's no vision
to
this one.
Yeah. This book's been bounced around between writers. It's been bounced around between stories. JSA said one continuous story.
Yeah.
You can jump on at any point, but it's always been one story, whereas this book, for a while it was with the Salvation Run story, for a while it was with another crossover thing, for a while they shoehorned it into something else. It was in Countdown. There hasn't been a consistently true voice or direction for this book, and that is the biggest problem.
Yeah, there's no vision. There's no vision for the book.
I don't mind that Vixen's there. I don't mind that Hawkgirl's there. I don't mind that Firestorm's there, although I'm glad they got rid of Red Tornado in this issue. He just annoys me for some reason. But
yeah. I mean, this book,
it's just a matter of there's no vision to the book.
Yeah, Justice League of America should be the backbone of the linchpin. It's the book that brings together the heroes, and it should be one of the main books of DC's line, and it's an afterthought.
You're going to put on that? Because Geoff Johns busy, and Grant Morrison already did it.
Yeah.
That's their problem.
I don't know.
There's no answer. Yeah. I don't know. I'm racking my brain trying to think of a name that they could put on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know one.
Yeah. I should put Jason Aaron on it and move to a reservation.
It's sort of like the X-Men going to the Outback, I guess.
Yes.
it's awful. So I thought I should probably talk about a comic book because, you know, I'm on the show, apparently.
You only bought 5 books. What do you want?
Savage Dragon number 138 came out, and it has an interesting stamp on the cover. It says Savage Dragon World Tour, and it's doing one of those things where I believe they're intermixing all the various characters from the Image universe into Savage Dragon, which, as a continuity fan and just a fan of these characters, can be a lot of fun, and Larson is like a great guy to do that with. And this issue actually featured Adam Archer from Godland, as well as Jack Staff from Paul Grist's series. And it just, you know, I mean, if you're an Image fan, if you're reading Image books, you know, it's a lot of fun to see the crossover and to see, you know, Larson get to do some of the big Kirby-esque, you know, art that Scioli is doing on Godland with lots of dots, which he can do really, really well. Kind of similar to what Allred is doing on Man-Man, you know, every issue I feel like is Larson is experimenting in different ways. And in this way, he is Nikos Koutsis doing colors. And the coloring is the one thing that I noticed with this issue. It's got a very, you know, distinct kind of coloring style that's, you know, a little retro, but also modern in the ways using tones and values and stuff like that. So, I don't know, it's continuing to be fun. And ever since Larson has stepped down, this book has been coming out on time.
Well, he's got time now to do it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So. Yay.
Speaking of time, if you have a little bit of spare time and you have yourself one of them TVs, you should probably check out Netflix. Over 90,000 titles. Many of you can get Blu-ray titles of a lot of the stuff that is out in that format while Blu-ray lasts. No late fees, free shipping both ways. There's very fast delivery. Most of the stuff ships in one day. Plans start from $4.99 and you can get a free 2-week trial at www.netflix.com/ifanboy.
We're not the only ones that read books. Everybody in iFanboy land reads their books and they go to ifanboy.com and they pull them and they rate and review them and they write their own reviews. We like to spotlight them sometimes in the user review spotlight. And the first book up is No Hero Number 1, reviewed by Astiak, who gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 1.7% of iFan base made it their pick of the week. And Astiak says, loved the art, could care less about any character in the book, and I'm not willing to wait 2 years for and 7 parts of a story to gel, only to find out that the ending was no better than the beginning. Maybe the trade will read well. Maybe my problem is that I am so pissed off at authors, artists who can't keep on a regular schedule that I won't cut them any slack. Whatever the reason, No Hero is off my pull list.
This is Warren Ellis' new book from Avatar with the same artist that he had on Black's
Juan something Reap something.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
RYP.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are contrary opinions, but here's one.
I can't get into his Avatar stuff.
I held this book in my hand because I thought the cover design was really cool, and I flipped through it, and then I put it back because I tried Black Summer and it didn't stick with me. And the thing is, Ellis's Avatar work has come out on time. Like, it's not that Black Summer was delayed or anything like that. I don't think that was a problem. You know,
there was a Zero issue that came out about 4 or 5 months ago of No Hero, I think, and that was the thing.
Yeah, but there's a Zero issue of Captain America White in June. I don't know. I thought about checking out, but I just put it back. All right.
Next up, a review of Punisher War Journal 24. Neil Appeal gave it 5 out of 5 on art and story, and all of the 0.33% made it their pick. He says, what I love so much about this is that where other tie-ins have skillfully accommodated Secret Invasion, often with amazing results, This book feels like Secret Invasion was written specifically to be a backdrop to this story. The way the things have been building up in this series came together in the midst of this crazy-ass battle, which was absolutely perfect. It's like Secret Invasion is an obstacle that a talented writer can swerve around beautifully, but Fraction and Remender are running over it in a monster truck. This is not a Skrull book. This is a Frank Castle book.
Which is a great – this is a great – that's a great observation, I think, yeah.
It's a great review. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Was I the only one who read it, or?
Yeah, I actually want.
It was good. It was a lot of fun. Chaykin's art was great. I love Chaykin. The observation of the story fitting in to the backdrop of Secret Invasion, but propelling the storyline, which I don't know because I'm not reading the book, but was great. And there were great little scenes, you know, like Castle gets in the monster truck and he's driving through New York killing Skrulls and he puts the radio on and he's excited that there's still a station playing music. And like, it's just like.
I love the idea of smiling Frank Castle. Like, yeah. This is great.
Yep.
Greatest thing ever.
Yeah. Head over to ifanboy.com/comics and pick your comics and write your own reviews, and you could set your pick of the week and tell everybody what you think of comics. And if you are a fan of comic books, most likely this past weekend, if you lived in the Ohio area, you were at the Mid-Ohio Con. The convention is going on as we are talking right now. It was this weekend. They had such great people like Alan Davis and Chris Claremont, another big name, Jason Mewes.
Chris Eliopoulos,
yes, indeed. And it looks like they really, the Mid-Ohio Con is one of those smaller conventions that give you a lot of exposure to the creators. And it's just a really, really good con to go to, especially if you're in that Midwest area right around Ohio. They're going to be doing it again next year. So make sure you go to midohiocon.com. It's all one word, midohiocon.com. And check out the dates for next year. And make sure if you missed it this year, you got to see it next year. You got to go.
It's one of those really good sort of creator-centric cons about comics and things.
Yeah, exactly. So Ethan Van Sciver was there, David Mack, Sean McKeever, Roger Stern, Mark Evanier, Chris Giarrusso, Joe Kubert, jeez, come on. So make sure you go to midohiocon.com and check out next year's show.
We get a little email going. Woody from Cincinnati writes in and asks, how many comic book readers do you think there are in the U.S.? I guess the first thing is to determine what qualifies as a comic book reader. I would think that they have to buy more than one monthly floppy issue a month just to prevent counting someone who's just a Buffy fan or a Stephen King fan. I'd love to hear some takes on how many of us there are out there. There's no statistics on this, so we are only able to spitball.
Oh, no. There are 72.
No shit.
Yeah, 72. That's it. That's the only
we
people
are
in the comics. No, I mean, the problem with the problem with the comics audience is that it's a guessing game, because the way we track sales are tracked, or they track the comics that are sold to the stores, not comics that are sold to people. You know, an issue like New Event or Secret Invasion is going to sell 100,000 copies. We don't know if 100,000 people are buying it or not. And, you know, there are still people out there buying 20 copies of it and slamming it and doing all that kind of stuff because it's still a collector medium. And then on top of that, there's all these trade paperbacks and collected editions that sell through Borders and Amazon that we have no insight to. We don't know how those sales are. That said, you look at something like, you know, San Diego, and over 150,000 people showed up. And Middle East, it's not all comics. I know it's not all comics, but you look at a convention like New York, which is, you know, more comics or whatever, and 50,000, 60,000 people showing up.
What percentage of the 100,000 people at San Diego do you think were actually comic book readers, though? I mean, I would literally think 30%, maybe.
30 at the highest.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that might be conservative, because I mean a lot of people.
You said regular monthly readers.
A lot. I mean, admittedly, the entertainment has a huge draw, but I think that there are a lot of people in line for those creators. There are a lot of people in costume. There's a lot of people in those panels. Maybe 30%. I would hope that it's a little more, but yeah, I could see that.
My guess, the number that I've always stuck around in my head, is somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000.
Secret Invasion number one sold stores with 300,000 copies, so I would say it's a little higher. It's probably in the 500,000 range.
That's my guess. Yeah. I would say there are probably about 500,000 dedicated comic readers, and then there are probably, I would say, upwards of over a million casual comic readers.
Yeah, I mean, there's people. Yeah. People are buying those Watchmen trades, and the nice thing is that some trade paperbacks and some things are being read by people who are not necessarily comic book readers, and that's actually what we want. You know, this is the age of graphic novel.
Case in point, I had a friend of mine from a previous life that he was in a band. I knew him from music and stuff like that. Emailed me because he stumbled upon one of our episodes, and he's just like, "Yeah, I'm just getting into this Invincible book," and like I didn't even know he ever read comics, and he didn't. Somebody handed it to him. He checked it out. He ordered them all, and so he's a casual fan. I don't know. I think they're out there, but it's definitely, I mean, it's a smaller number than what we want it to be.
And when you break it down, it gets even scarier. I remember going to a baseball game with Ron, and we were at this Yankee Stadium. It was full. Looking at the stadium and saying, more people in the stadium than read most comic books.
Yeah.
Individually. That's a scary prospect.
Yeah, when you hear about great books that are selling like less than 10,000 or, you know.
Yeah,
four or five.
It's sad. It's really
with
crazy.
The amount of work that goes into stuff like that, it's just
Even when you get past the first 20, top 20 or so, you start hitting under 50,000 readers. That's
sad.
Scary. Luke from Denver writes and says, please speak on Ex Machina. I like the book, I think, but it's coming out less and less often now, bi-monthly. And I feel like it could go either way. I personally care more about the political stuff than the superhero stuff and would like to see the book shift more in that direction. But it seems that they are going to be some kind of alien machine god thing coming soon. Is it falling flat? Is it still greatness a la Y or Pride of Baghdad or Runaways? You never talk about this book, so talk about it.
Well, I thought this was an interesting question because if you had asked me 2 months ago, I would totally agree with Luke and I'd be like, oh, Vaughn is working on Lost. He doesn't care about comics anymore or whatever. But I had the opportunity to talk to Tony Harris on the Mark Miller-Tony Harris episode of iFanboy, and I asked him, I'm like, what's with the delays? And he said Brian has been nothing but on time, and that he's, and if there's anybody the excuse for the delays on Ex Machina, it's been Tony Harris and the art. But then also he referred to Ex Machina with such love and reverence. He referred to it, he put his hands together and said, my baby, my Ex Machina. And so, like, I can't believe that it just, you know, it's kind of a second, you know, a second fiddle to War Heroes or anything else that Tony Harris is working on. He really has a lot of pride in that book, and I know Vaughn does as well.
But then why does it come out, though?
That's the question. I mean, maybe,
For a little while, Tony Harris was doing, he's been doing War Heroes, and he did that Spider-Man book for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he took on too much.
Yeah, possibly, happens.
And so, you know, we haven't talked about it in a while because there was a 3-month delay or something like that. But the last one that came out just a couple of weeks ago, I think. That's pretty good.
That said, it is. I do feel like it's a little flat. It doesn't have the same energy that it did, and maybe because it's a little tired. But I don't know.
You know what? Though the thing that's happening in the book is that it looks like Mitchell's trying to run for president.
Yeah,
or he's thinking about it. And I like. To me, I'm really interested in that sort of the political story that they can tell about sort of the discovery of should I run for president? Would I have a chance? Is there a the thing is that's a big story and it could go on for years. So
Isn't there a planned ending for it? Isn't it like 60 issues or something like that as a planned ending?
Maybe
I think there is.
Maybe.
I believe it's a finite book.
Yeah, I believe there's a planned ending to it. Yeah,
you know, but
it's like why? Yeah,
is that a 5-year story or something? You know, but why came out all the time? So it's hard to say. I still like it. When I really think about what the book is, it's still one of my favorite books. I do wish we could see it more often, and I think that being on a bi-monthly schedule will really hurt it.
Yeah,
as opposed to monthly.
For me, it hasn't been a must read since this first year. Like, it's the first year I was really excited whenever an issue came out. After that, I was less and less and less excited to the point where I dropped it for trades way back, and I haven't seen a new trade in forever. So I don't even think about it. I forgot that it's still coming out.
There have been arcs that I didn't like as much, but there's usually stuff in there that I find it to be an interesting read. And I love Brian K. Vaughan's work, and it's the only comic book he's writing now. So when I get it, it's really nice to get that little touch of Vaughn because he's a great comic book writer.
Totally. All right, cool. So if you have any questions, you can choose an email at contact@ifanboy.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Voicemail. First one is from Jeff and would like to know about The Rock.
Hey, it's Jeff from Texas. I was thinking about celebrities in comics and particularly musicians. I know that Kiss had a few comics. They had the Image stuff from the 90s and then the Marvel stuff that they did, and then also that was way back in the 70s, and then also, like, I know ICP had like a whole run of comics that they did where they put out singles, CDs with every issue and everything. And I was wondering what other musical artists had comics or maybe appeared in comics or something like that. All right, thanks, guys.
The question is that musicians that actually appeared in the comics, because, you know, of course we talked about a lot of comics that are about music and things like that, but actually I remember when I first got into comics in the early 90s, there was a publisher of comics called Revolutionary Comics, and they were around from 89 to 94, and they had a series called Rock and Roll Comics. They're basically real life biographies of bands. I remember I picked up the Jane's Addiction comic, which had some great scenes of Perry Farrell doing heroin and things like that. They got a lot of notice when they did Guns N' Roses, and Guns N' Roses wanted a cease and desist, and it had a lot of, you know, an entire print run of 10,000 sold out in 2 weeks, and, you know, and so it was a big kind of to-do with that. But they did, you know, they did profiles on Bon Jovi, Motley Crue. Like, you can imagine, like, in 89, 90, 91, what bands they were doing.
Awesome.
But what was really interesting is that some of the creators that worked on it, I mean, Rick Geary, who did the Book of the Month at iFanboy, Treasury of Murder, he worked for them. Larry Niven, the writer, the science fiction author. Stuart Immonen did some art for them. Len Kirk. So really interesting. If you can find them, it's the kind of thing, they're not in print anymore, but you could probably find them at cons and things like that in the back issue bins. So that's what I think of when I think of bands with, you know, comics with bands in them. As far as anything else, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't tend to read those, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Next up is Mike, who has a very specific question about what he should drop.
Hey, guys.
three quick points. First off, my name's Mike from New Jersey. Show's great. Number two, I got a question. I'm trying to trim my pull list. I need to drop one of two books, either Guardians of the Galaxy or Captain Britain and MI-13. Not sure which one to drop. And third, super psyched, just got my girlfriend to start reading comic books. She's loving the Green Lantern Secret Origins story arc. All right, keep up the good work, guys. Take care.
Wow. Listen, I cannot in good conscience recommend you drop either of those books. There must be something worse you're reading than that.
Yeah, we need to see your entire pull list in order to advise you on this.
Drop the one you're not enjoying. I can't tell you what you're not enjoying, but if you're bringing up those, maybe you're not digging them or whatever. But those, to me, are like two of the hidden gems of Marvel Comics these days.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Drop Guardians.
And I'd like to applaud that he kept that voicemail under 30 seconds. That was good. Although I felt very rushed through it while listening to it. I was like, I don't know what you should drop. Drop something.
I was stressed out.
Yeah,
girlfriend. Oh, okay, yes. Oh, Green Lantern. Pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yay for your girlfriend.
I mean, if you need to go longer than 30 seconds, you can try it, but you better be damn interesting.
Yeah. So if you have any questions you want to call in and ask us, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697, and keep them under 30 seconds, and be sure to tell us your name and where you're from.
I kind of want to read Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's so good.
All the Nova Guardians talk has got me curious.
Wow. Get them all stocked up.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Sigh curious.
Oh. I don't think you've ever punned before.
Is that a pun? I guess it is, yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. It's wordplay.
If you like what you heard here, go to ifanboy.com. You can read Josh's full Pick of the Week review on Top 10 Season 2, Number 1. You can also check out our in-depth comic book discussion, our daily columnists, who are great, Thursday column from Paul Dini and Chris Niesman from Around Comics, all of our great writers every day at ifanboy.com.
Yay. Be sure to head over to ifanboy.com/store, where you can shop on Amazon for comics, video games, music, whatever you might like, and it helps ifanboy out while you do it. So ifanboy.com/store.
There is a video show, and we still have the weekly show, and that is not going anywhere. Every Wednesday, you can look for that at revision3.com/ifanboy. This past week was the legendary, the epic Robert Kirkman, Brian Michael Bendis discussion from the Baltimore Comic Con, and I couldn't make it, so I was very pleased that both of you got to show me what it was like. I was fascinated. I thought it was great.
Very hot really, in that room.
Yeah, it got very hot. You could tell by C.B. Cebulski.
Well, thanks to you, I was... I was quite comfortable. I got to watch it in comfort.
Nice.
So thank you.
Good.
This next week coming up, Ben Templesmith. Maybe we talk about a little art?
Yeah, I think we're going to make a lot of people happy with this one.
Yeah, because he draws
popular.
Nice.
Yeah.
He draws real nice.
Cool.
So look for those.
One thing I like to do is I like to sit down and watch that weekly show wearing my iFanboy t-shirt.
you made a little banner, too.
Right next to my mannequins with a picture of Josh and Ron's face on them. Not at all creepy.
That's awkward.
So if you want to set up your own little iFanboy setup, you can go to jinx.com/iFanboy, get a t-shirt, and you're on your way to setting up your own mobile iFanboy unit.
You don't like that, do you, Josh?
No.
Say it again.
Your mobile iFanboy unit. If talking to your life-size mannequins of the iFanboy guys isn't enough, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at the aforementioned 1-888-FANBOYS, 1-888-326-2697. Any questions, comments, complaints, criticisms, anything you like, write or call us.
I made Ron go down in the hole. go to ifanboy.com.
I thought you were going in a different direction.
Oh, God.
Go to ifanboy.com/about, where you can model your lifelike figures with the photos there and the stories about us. But also you find links there to all the social networks to whom we subscribe, I guess. MySpace, ComicSpace, Verb, Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. Get thee there. If you're following the iFanboy feed on Twitter but not us three, you might be missing out. Except for Ron's, which are really creepy. No, they're not. I joke.
If you like the show and you like what we do here and on the video show, you can write us a review at iTunes, which is a great way to help people find the show. It helps them when they search for comic book shows. So if you go do that, we'd appreciate it, good or bad. We'd like to have the word spread. You can tell your mom you're a comic book store guy, the guy you buy your mannequins from, anybody really. Tell them about iFanboy.
Cool. It's in the mannequin district, isn't it?
Yes.
Mannequins, mannequins, mannequins.
35th to 10th and 11th. It's a very small district.
Mannequins are us.
Just mannequins.
That's where Andrew McCarthy works now.
You got any heads here? No, just mannequins. Okay.
Who played Hollywood? Was that Arsenio Hall?
No, it was Meshach Taylor.
It was Meshach Taylor. My God. That's who it was. Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah.
It was Designing Women. Designing Women.
Yeah, Meshach Taylor. Yeah, that's who it was.
And the Sex in the City chick was the mannequin.
Oh, yeah, Kim Cattrall. Yeah, Kim Cattrall.
Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, back when she wasn't nasty. What? Anyway, so if you like the show and you've got some money saved after buying your mannequin, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations and click on the donation boxes and help out the iFanboy cause, because it takes a lot of money to maintain these here mannequins. You can donate any
lipstick on Connor.
Any amount that you like via PayPal, and we appreciate everybody who's donated. You keep us in business. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
I've got this closet that, you know, the one that I don't let you guys go into when you're over here. That's where the mannequins are kept.
Awkward.
I actually really made a mannequin buddy in college.
Oh, God. We're releasing this to thousands of people, Connor.
When baseball would come around, I didn't have anybody to watch it with, so I made a little baseball buddy I could talk to about baseball. I got a picture of him.
Oh, my God.
Awful.
Oh, Grant Morrison would be proud. Was it peyote or was it – what was it?
I can't talk about that.
Okay.
That's my friend. Don't look at her.
He got very jealous when his friend was watching.
Stop looking.
The problem was that he made the mannequin, but the mannequin was a Red Sox fan, and he was fucked. He never got along. Well, until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. Look at me.
Josh Mannequin.
Josh Mannequin.
Oh, that's funny.
The members only giveaway.
Three?
By real dolls.
All the angels sing about Jesus, mighty soul. And they shield you with the wings and keep you close to the Lord. For his hands are so cold, you gotta help me keep a devil way down in the hole.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.